Now we just finished celebrating the best movies of 2017. The 90th Academy Awards took place on Sunday with The Shape of Water winning Best Picture. And while some other movies like Dunkirk and Lady Bird received some critical accolades last year, the rest of the movie industry is a different story. You might even be frustrated by the options at your local movie theater, all the superhero movies and endless sequels, with maybe the occasional Phantom Thread type art film tucked in there for good measure. But why are things like this? It turns out there's a method to studio executives' madness, one aimed at making the most money possible, thanks to franchises, cinematic universes, and lots of merchandising. But is that strategy actually working, and is it making it more difficult for unique, standalone movies to make it to the big screen? Ben Fritz is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal covering the entertainment industry. His new book is The Big Picture, The Fight for the Future of Movies. He joins to try and answer some of those questions. Ben, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Ben, you say we're in the midst of a huge transformation in movies. What is going on?
Yeah, in my book, I call it the franchise era of films. Studios used to really succeed by making a broad array of films. I'm sure you and your listeners recall, you used to be able to go to the multiplex. There'd be romantic comedies. There'd be dramas for adults. There'd be original movies. And then there'd be a few other superhero films. Now when you go, it feels like it's almost all superhero movies, Fast and Furious, franchise-driven movies, you know, the latest Star Wars, et cetera. They're all coming from brands. And it's really, there's been a huge transformation in the film business where it's really driven by brands and franchises that are meant to appeal to a large global audience. And a lot of other films have fallen by the wayside, especially original dramas for adults. It's worth noting, one of my favorite things, you recall in 1988 or 89, if you recall the movie Rain Man, mm-hmm. It was the number one movie in America. Most popular film. Right now, Rain Man probably wouldn't even get made by a Hollywood studio.
I guess this is happening because it works. These movies make lots and lots of money, right?
They do. They absolutely make a lot of money. Our tastes have changed, and there's a few reasons why these make the most money. One is the movie business has gone global. It's not just what Americans care about. It's what people in China and Russia and Brazil and Italy and Mexico think. And if you want a movie that's going to appeal to everyone, whether you're in Wisconsin or you're in Shanghai, or you're in Israel or you're in France, it can't be too specific, right? It can't be really culturally specific. It needs to be broadly understandable. Well, a big special effects movie is easy to understand. It doesn't matter what language you speak. It doesn't matter if you understand American culture. At the same time, I bet not many of your listeners buy DVDs anymore, and it was DVD sales that used to make a lot of these diverse kinds of movies possible. And that's a huge revenue source for Hollywood that's fallen away. And of course, these companies are all part of huge corporations now. Disney is a huge corporation. Universal is owned by Comcast. Disney's buying Fox right now, as you may know. AT&T is buying Time Warner. And these big companies, they don't just want a successful movie. They want a brand that can also become a theme park ride and a T-shirt and a toy. And there are obviously no Rain Man toys, right? But there's lots of there are lots of toys and theme park rides and everything for all the Marvel superhero films and Transformers and films like that.
Well, I look at the last year and I look at Get Out as a movie that didn't cost much to make and made a lot of money. But then reading your book, I'm thinking there's not going to be a Get Out theme park ride. I'm guessing we don't have a lot of Get Out lunchboxes and action figures out there. Even though it was successful in movie terms, from the perspective of people wanting to make serious money, even that might not be a lesson, right?
That's right. Look, Get Out was very successful, made a lot of money, but there's not going to be a sequel. There's no spin-offs. There's no toys, like you said. So it doesn't make the kind of money that, like, a Jumanji does or a Spider-Man or a Despicable Me, where those keep making hundreds of millions of dollars far into the future. Get Out came out, made its money, and was done. And for every Get Out, there's so many lower-budget films that come out and they don't succeed the box office anymore. The reason you know Get Out is it's so rare in the current environment. It used to be common. And one other factor I forgot to mention, but I'm sure you're familiar with, is huge, is think about how much better TV has gotten, how many great shows there are on cable, on HBO, on Netflix, and Amazon. It used to be TV was the idiot box, right? If you stay home and watch TV, it was low quality. Now TV is really great. So why go to the theater to see an original drama when there's so many great ones to see at home?
Talking to Ben Fritz, his new book is The Big Picture, The Fight for the Future of Movies. Ben, you tell in the book the story of kind of how this developed, and you do it through the lens mostly of Sony Pictures, and you did interviews of your own, of course, but you had this treasure trove, this hack of Sony Pictures that let so much of the internal dialogue come out from behind the scenes. What did you learn from that?
Yeah, I wanted to tell the story of how Hollywood's changed, and I didn't just want to pontificate. I wanted to take my readers inside a studio so they could see firsthand. And the hack of Sony Pictures, really gave me that entry. You know, I spent a year reading every single email and document from that hack, and most of them were boring, but a few of them were treasure troves, and I took that small percentage that were interesting, put them all together, and created a narrative of a studio trying to adapt to this transformation of the movie business. And I really discovered that the movie executives weren't happy about this. You know, they loved to make the different kinds of movies. The reason they came into Hollywood was to make original, interesting movies, but they could just see that audience tastes were changing tremendously, and the executives at Sony were struggling to keep up. This was a studio that was very successful in the 2000s. They were the home of Will Smith and Adam Sandler back when movie stars were a really big deal. They made a broad array of interesting movies for adults. But as audience taste, move toward like the Marvel superhero movies and Fast and Furious and so on, Sony didn't have those big franchises, and they struggled to keep up, and their profits started falling significantly. And so the book is in part a picture of a studio struggling to adapt to the changes that we all see at the theaters.
And you followed an email thread of a pivotal moment where these studio executives, right, these towering figures in their industry, had to make this presentation to Wall Street outside investors. They had to sell themselves in a way that they didn't have to before.
And they did. This is a really fantastic scene a couple of years ago when Sony was struggling, and Sony has shareholders, of course, and this, so they had to try to present their business and make it seem like they had a plan to deal with all these changes. And so they went to one of their sound stages in the Sony Pictures lot here in Los Angeles. And, usually you imagine a sound stage is where all the glamorous stuff happens. It's, the actors and the cameras and the movie stars and the makeup. And now instead it's these studio executives who came here to make movies trying to sell themselves to Wall Street, trying to convince these big shareholders and Wall Street analysts that they can make movies that will, appeal to the global audience that likes Marvel and likes Pixar and likes Transformers and so on. And you can tell from the emails and some subsequent interviews I did that these Sony Pictures executives found it pretty humiliating. This is not what they came to Hollywood to do, yet this is what studio executives these days have to do. Their first audience is not us. Their first audience is Wall Street.
We're talking to Ben Fritz. His new book is The Big Picture, The Fight for the Future of Movies. We're looking at how movies get made today and how that might be changing in the years to come. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the state of the movies in 2018? Are you feeling burned out on sequels and franchises and cinematic universes? Or are you happy to pick up the next Marvel movie or Star Wars installment? What kind of movies are you not seeing on the big screen that you want to? And do you see movies on the big screen, or do you hold out and see them at home? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. We pick up the conversation with Ben Fritz, author of the new book, The Big Picture, The Fight for the Future of Movies. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Are you glad to see? Do you like seeing the Marvel Cinematic Universe get more and more installments, or the Star Wars franchise get developed more? Or are you thinking, there's not enough different kinds of movies out there for me, and how do you watch your movies? At home? At the theater? Not at all? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go straight to your calls. Kevin is with us in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi. Got a couple of comments. I don't mind the franchise reinstallments. Kind of fun to watch those, but I do get kind of tired of sequel after sequel after remake after remake. And frankly, Mel Brooks called this years ago during the movie Spaceballs, when he took everybody to the gift shop and said, merchandising is where the real money from the movie is made.
Kevin, thank you so much for bringing that up. Yeah, Star Wars in some ways started this merchandising thing, but it's gone into hyperdrive lately, Ben. Can you talk about how this developed from Mel Brooks's merchandising?
Yeah, it was my favorite movie when I was a kid. Look, Star Wars really did kick this off. It was one of the first sort of big summer event films, of course, way back in 77, and, you know, one of the first franchises. You know, there was that original trilogy and then another trilogy in the late 90s and early 2000s. And it really showed how much money can be made from the merchandise, more money can be made from the merchandise than from the movies themselves. And movies, in fact, may not be a business made to make money from the movies. That movies can be a business made to make money from the merchandise, and the films are really big advertisements. But of course, think about how Star Wars has changed. It was bought by Disney for $4 billion. And remember, the Star Wars movies came out every 3 years during the original trilogy, and then there was a long break. Now there's a new Star Wars movie every year. The last one came out in December, The Last Jedi. The next one comes out in May, the new Han Solo film. So Disney, which is really the most successful studio with this new way of making films, the franchise era, they have absolutely taken Star Wars to light speed, so to speak.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Aaron in Oshkosh. Aaron, hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, everybody. I appreciate that. I will try to be as quick and succinct as possible.
Go for it.
Just like the music industry has had to learn to adjust to the new paradigm, we have to kind of give the movie industry a grain of salt. You know, they're trying to keep the lights on. Now that we have the advent of 4K streaming Dolby VHX to the comfort of our 75-inch TVs at home, myself personally and most of the people I know, it's got to be something very, you know, stunning with a big pull that's going to tell me I have to see this in a super, super wide screen to get me out of the house. Although I'm a big fan of intelligent and humanistic inclined stories, those movies realistically tend not to bring home the bucks.
Aaron, thanks a lot for the call. I think a lot of us have been there, Ben. I could see this movie at home and it'll be just as good. Oh, that movie, Star Wars or something like that. Yeah, that I've got to get out to see on the big screen. And that's got to be a pain for the movie producers.
It is. Something a lot of executives in Hollywood talk about now, and is very evident in the book, is that the bar has been raised. What they mean by that is the minimum level of excitement that you need to get audiences out of their homes and into the theater, like your caller, has been raised significantly. Again, back when TV wasn't very good, and maybe all we had was a VHS tape, or you had to wait a long time for the DVD even, you went to the movie theater to see something good and interesting. Now, just turn on Netflix, and it costs you $0 more to watch so much more good stuff, including movies. Netflix and Amazon are making original movies now, not just TV shows. So if you're going to go to the theater, it better be something that's this visual effects extravaganza that, you know, you can't, it doesn't look as good in your home theater, or that rare film that everybody's talking about and you have to go see to be part of the cultural moment. You know, everybody was talking about Wonder Woman last summer, and if you didn't, or Black Panther right now. And if you're not seeing it, you feel like you're missing out.
Let's bring on another caller. Kelly is with us in Eau Claire. Kelly, hi.
Hi. So just to let you know where I'm coming from, the last three movies I've seen in the theater were Wonder, The Greatest Showman, and Hostiles. Very different, very unique. They were the family films. The Hostiles, my wife had a hard time sitting through it, but she thought it was great at the end. My comment and question is, what's with the multiple production companies? It seems instead of having one production company, there's six or more.
Yeah, Kelly, thanks. We have limited time, but Ben, yeah, you see three or five or six or whatever different production tags at the beginning of each movie, it seems like.
Sure. I think especially for a film like Hostiles, when you'll see all those, because an actual regular studio, so to speak, like Fox or Universal, didn't make that. The money came from all sorts of different places. If you're making those kind of non-franchise films, you have to raise your money from unusual sources, because the studios don't make those kind of films much anymore. So when you're raising money from five or six different sources, that means you got to put five or six different companies' logos at the front of your movie.
Kelly, thanks for the call. Ben, I know you said you didn't just want to pontificate in your book, but I get the impression that you don't like it that we're not going to movie theaters as much. There's something different about the communal experience of seeing a movie as opposed to sitting in the living room and watching it.
I do think there's something lost. Look, I mean, I love Netflix as much as anyone, and I think that's a perfectly fine part of our content diet. But the great thing about a movie theater is when you see something together with a group of people and you have that communal experience. You know, I remember where I was when I saw Return of the Jedi. You know, and I was a little kid. We all remember where we are when we see great movies. I don't think we necessarily remember sitting on the couch watching this TV show, especially if it's on our DVD. DVR or Netflix queue. We don't remember where we were when we happened to get around to streaming it. Those are special moments, and it's a special moment for our culture when we're all seeing the same film around the same time. Everybody's talking about Black Panther now. Black Panther was something to stream on your TV. Maybe I'll get around to it in a month or two. You know, watch it when I watch it. But we're all, if I want to see Black Panther now, we're all talking about having seen Black Panther. That's an awesome and important thing. That's why movies make such a big impact on our culture. And if that goes away entirely, I think it'll be a shame.
Are we ever going to see another impact movie with that kind of scope that isn't part of a franchise, as Black Panther is?
We'll see some. I mean, it's only been a year since Get Out. We will see, but there are fewer and fewer of them. They're just going to become rarities. Is the answer. And there may only be one or two per year. Whereas I think, you know, it wasn't that long ago when there was a new one every month.
Are you hoping that? I mean, this was a big change. Are you hoping that there's going to be a second change that shakes things up and makes it a little different anytime soon?
I am hopeful, and Hollywood can be cyclical, and things will change again. But I think fundamentally, I don't think we're gonna suddenly be streaming less content. I don't think that the digital revolution is reversible. I think the good news is all these companies, tech companies, getting into content like Apple and Amazon and Netflix, obviously is so huge now, and AT&T buying Time Warner. The reason they produce content is they want you to be engaged in their universe. They want you to use Apple products or use Amazon Prime, and they produce a lot of content to get you in their universes. So we are losing our movie theater experience a bit, but we're getting more and more great content. It's really a golden age for great visual content, whether it's a movie or a TV show, and whether you watch it on the big screen or on your TV screen or on your iPad or perhaps on your new virtual reality headset next year. So in that sense, it's good.
Ben, thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it.
I really appreciate you having me on.
That's Ben Fritz. He's a reporter for the Wall Street Journal, where he covers the entertainment industry. We've been talking about his new book. It's called The Big Picture, The Fight for the Future of Movies.